Good morning, good morning, good morning. I just love saying that. I don't know why, a million times, but I want anyone who is not having a good morning or their morning is not starting off as exciting as mine, I want you to just have a good morning. That's why I have a morning show so you can take this information, this education, this entertainment out into your day. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and I already know that this is going to be an amazing show. Why? Because two of our guests have been here before, and both of them were the star of the show. And coincidentally, they're back here together. Now, I'm going to go ahead and ask you to do what I always ask you to do, and that's to go ahead and share this show because friends don't let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show. We are here to entertain, but we are also here to educate. We want you to learn. We want you to learn something from this show, which is why I bring you the experts in their field. I want to go ahead and introduce you to our first guest. Our first guest is Mr. Michael Hess, and he is the VP of Westpac Wealth Partner. Good morning, Michael. How are you?
I'm doing great, Sharifa. How are you? And thank you for having me back.
Thank you for coming back. Michael, like I said before, you were like the breakout star of the show. You're one of those people that you just look so, for lack of a better word, like just calm and like, but when you get to talking, you are a wealth of information. So I'm glad you were able to come back to the show. Michael, please tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Well, thanks. So it's funny, you nice little pun that you worked in there, a wealth of information, since I'm a wealth management advisor. I like that. Did you work on that?
I did just for you.
So I'm a wealth management advisor. I work with individuals, families, and business owners trying to help them get financially organized, teach them some ways to properly save, because traditional financial planning, from what I have found and in my experience, has really let people down. There's a lot of sort of uncommon things that myself and my firm do, and in our planning methods.
Are you just gonna leave us right there? Like, what are some of the things that you and your firm do?
Well, for instance, when people, just a philosophy, when people first get into the workforce, one of the things that they're told is in order to save for retirement, you should put your money and max out, if you can, your 401k plan. But when you're in your early 20s or even in your 30s, you're probably not making as much money as you would make later on in your careers, and you're going to be at a lower tax bracket. And by the way, this is my opinion. My firm, Park Avenue Securities, that I work for. This is, again, my opinion. So I have to say that because they told me compliance-wise. But when you're, when you're starting out, you're going to be a lower tax bracket, and you're delaying taxes and almost setting up a reverse tax bomb, because when you get to retirement, now you've probably been making more money, you've accumulated a lot of money, and it's great while you're accumulating. But when you start to withdraw the money, it's going to be most likely in a higher tax bracket. So you've kind of set up this bad planning situation. It's almost, I make the analogy, it's like putting your socks on over your shoes. They're both kind of smart to do, right? But there is a correct order on how to save. And so we like to teach people to save in a different order as well.
Okay. No, I love that example, but let me just ask you this, and this is just simply out of my curiosity. After the last show, did any of the other guests contact you, or did you see any of the things happen in that time frame? Because you were telling us a lot of things were going to happen. You were like, kind of to a certain extent, like, watch for it, wait for it. Like, did you notice any of those things, or did anyone contact you?
So I am working with one of the
I
guests.
knew it. I knew it. I knew it.
We've been talking a couple of times since then. I think it's only been about 3 weeks. And as far as things that have happened, the market is crazy. It just keeps going up no matter all the bad news that's coming out, and the uncertainty that's still there. So I'm very, very cautious, and a lot of my colleagues that I speak with, a lot of the other professionals that I read their articles, everybody just, they can't explain with certainty why the market has gone up. A year to date, we're only down about 5-6% now. And I think 3 weeks ago when I was on, we were down something in the neighborhood of 20. So It's just outstanding what's happening, but you know, there's nothing to say definitively that we've recovered and we're out of the woods.
Yes, which brings me to our next guest, who also was here before, and it was just very interesting. And one of the things I've noticed, I launched this show on March 30th, and I had no idea what to expect. I didn't know what would happen, if it would work, if people would get along. I think Michael was on our most heated show to date. That was very interesting. But I began to see commonalities. No matter what industry, people found commonalities. And our next guest was thought a little bit, because everybody was more of an entrepreneur. They were more focused on business in the last show. And then our next guest, she helps people. She has her own services, but she wasn't in business or trying to promote anything per se. But she became the breakout star of the show when everyone came to her for advice. So I'm going to go ahead and introduce you to our next guest, Jody DeLuca, who is of Erie, Colorado Counseling. Good morning, Jody. Welcome back.
Good morning, Sharifa. It's a pleasure and a privilege to be back. I'm so happy to be back. The show is great and it does so much good. So thank you for having me again.
You are very welcome. I love for everybody to come back. I love for everyone to return. But there are certain people that stand out in my mind, like Michael, because, you know, of everything that he brought. And Jody, you were amazing, because sometimes people just want to sell. Like, they just want to promote. There's a phrase one of our guests, Sue of Sue Talks, coined the other day, pitch slapping. Like, people just want to pitch everything. So, you know, it's so fast. But you were so calm and you were like, let me just be the voice of reason. Jody, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Well, I'm a licensed clinical psychologist. I've been a psychologist for over 20 years. Prior to that, a mental health counselor. I currently have a private practice in Erie, which is near Boulder, Colorado. But I've spent most of my careers working as a clinical psychologist within emergency rooms, trauma units, burn units, a medical psychologist, to say. I'm also an emergency medical technician, not active right now, because with the practice, that takes up a lot of time, but it's a privilege. So when you and I first met, the COVID-19 pandemic was just starting, and there was so much going on. So it's going to be very interesting to see where we are here at this point now from a psychological perspective, the changes that I've seen, or the new little spikes in different behavior, mood, and what's happening to us, and the global grief. It's called a collective grief that we're all feeling, but also the strength and power that we have as a nation and even universally. So I'm just glad I'm here.
I'm glad you're here as well. What are some of the things that you've been able to do and resources you have been able to provide for people at Erie, Colorado Counseling that are struggling and having a hard time right now?
Good question. And I think the main thing that I find that people really tap into is the fact that what they're feeling, what they're thinking, even any kind of like strange behavior that they're suddenly engaging in, it's all appropriate to the situation of what's going on. So if they're feeling depressed, if they're angry, if they're frustrated, if there's a panic, that constant fight and flight, it's supposed to be that way, because what is going on with this pandemic is a psychological, physical, economic threat to all of us. So universally, collectively, we are all experiencing this shock and awe and the unknown.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, absolutely. Which brings me to our next guest. And I was interested in speaking with our next guest, because with everything going on in the world, people are focused on their finances. They're focused on having a change from working in an office to working from home. But people had a lot of questions in regards to health. And our next guest, Ms. Deb Gordon, is the expert. She's the voice that's able to talk to us a little bit more about health. And we're also going to discuss her new book. Good morning, Deb. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
You are very welcome. One of the things that I love to do, and I did it on the next show with Michael, because his book that he was showing was Think and Grow Rich. So I'm always curious. And the first thing that popped out at me is manifesto. And usually when we hear the word manifesto, it's like, oh my God, what is going on? Tell us a little bit about your book, Deb.
Sure, thanks. So I wrote this book, The Healthcare Consumer's Manifesto. Really, you know, so I call myself a recovering health insurance executive. Mm-hmm. I spent almost a decade leading marketing for a health insurance company. And from the inside of the industry, I did learn a lot about just the language and the rules and kind of why things work or don't work the way they do. And I get, because of that professional experience, I get so many questions all the time from people of all walks of life, but including very educated, very capable people who call me or you know, look at me and say, what should I do? Uh-huh. You know, it's time for me to pick health insurance, or my dad is picking a Medicare plan. What should I tell him? Uh-huh. And you know, the honest truth is I don't know what you should do, but I do know some of the questions you can start with and some of the frameworks you can, really basic ways you can start to break down those really complex and overwhelming decisions that people make. So I felt like there was a need, you know, among everyone who's a healthcare consumer, and I would call that everyone, to really kind of try to illuminate some of why the system works the way it does and how to get more from it. So one thing that really plagues me is we spend $1 trillion as consumers, as Americans, out of our own pockets on our healthcare and our health insurance. But when it comes to healthcare, we don't necessarily feel like the customer. We don't necessarily feel empowered to ask for what we need, or I say demand, you know, I mean, nicely, demand it nicely. But, you know, why don't we expect more? Why don't we expect the same kind of service and attention and customization and value in healthcare as we do in everything else we spend money on? So that's why I wrote the book. And the manifesto, I describe myself like a crazy lady with a sign by the side of the road, like, we've got to make change. And I personally believe change will have to come from outside the industry. And it's on all of us to do a little, you know, if we knock on the door, each of us knock, 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 we'll eventually together open that door and make improvements.
I don't think you're a crazy lady at all. I think
Thank
that
you. Thank you.
You are welcome. You are one of the people in what you stand for. You're one of the people that I would love to put at the forefront. Like if someone asked me, who could you give this space to? You are definitely one of those people, because I believe that healthcare is one of those last taboo areas where people are like, we don't discuss it. We don't talk about it. It just is what it is. Like, and you know more about this than I do, but some people don't even know that they can pay cash for services, that they can actually pay for them, as opposed to, because for different reasons, and I would say monetary reasons, but that's just me in my opinion, but it's kind of kept secret. We're just told you have to go through your insurance, you have to do it this way, and we just do. Am I correct? Am I way off?
You are dead on. So right on. You know, actually in my book, what I did was I interviewed dozens and dozens of consumers, just regular people, and asked them to tell me about their healthcare experiences, and that specifically the times when they've had to make a financial decision. Mm-hmm. And I would ask questions like, did you ever try negotiating for that, the cost? Did you ever ask the price of a service before you got it? And some people, again, very educated people, sometimes will say like, I never even thought about that. Oh, should I do that? Is that even possible? And so I think you're completely right that almost the system is not set up to invite us individuals to really get the value I think we deserve. But we also put barriers on ourselves. And I think it's perfect that we have a psychologist here, because maybe you could explain why. But, you know, in my experience,
you know, Deb, I'm listening to you.
Imagination.
And I like YouGo because being a healthcare provider for so many years and working within the healthcare systems, and because I'm self-employed, I've been carrying my own health insurance for so long. I've got to tell you, I'm right there with you. And what Sharifa said, it's kind of like the taboo topic. And even though we have during, you know, election years, people are, oh, we're all healthcare, mental health, behavioral, medical, but then we don't hear about it again. And it makes me so mad because I think a majority of us are made to feel, hey, it's a privilege. No, it's a necessity. We are entitled to that, especially in this country. And we don't. If you don't have it, you're looked down upon, or if you have Medicaid, you're looked down upon. It shouldn't be that way. It shouldn't be that way. And it's more important than ever. And so many people are intimidated by it because there's also a lot of bullying that goes on within the insurance world, and just dealing it with my own patients and with insurance is, no, you're telling me how I'm supposed to run my business with my clinical experience based on monies or insurance criteria. It's a little difficult to take. So I am so glad that this book is here, and I will be one that will definitely read it. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, Deb. Go ahead.
So I just wanted to say, that I wrote a chapter on mental health. I'm really interested in, for example, just if I may, you know, Jody, you said healthcare is essential. It's not a privilege. It shouldn't be a privilege. Well, I would say the same, yes, and especially mental health care. Like, we know that our emotional and our psychological health affects our productivity, our livelihood, and our physical health. And so this idea that somehow mental health services are separate or not paid for, it's actually crazy. It's not data driven. It's money driven. And yes. I just wanted to validate you. You know, I interviewed about a dozen therapists in private practice, psychologists and psychiatrists and other counselors, and many of them do not take insurance.
I know.
Which creates a hardship for consumers, but they describe, and I interviewed one therapist who was so articulate about this feeling like insurance is like having someone else in the room. You know, I called it the third wheel in the doctor-patient relationship. You know, insurers are the third wheel, especially in a therapeutic therapy relationship. So maybe, Sharifa, that's another, maybe we can coordinate our schedules, come back and have a conversation about that, because I think we could take the whole time just on mental health care.
Absolutely. You come back, Deb. You come back, Jody. We'll definitely do that. I love the example of insurance being the third person in the room, but I just want to change it a little bit. I think that the insurance is the third person who's not in the room. They're not the ones in that meeting. You know, it's the patient, it's the doctor. You decide what you want. The doctor decides what they want. And then it's like insurance come in and say, nope, that's not what we want, you know? So it's a whole dynamic. And we're going to move on to our next guest. So we're going to talk about going from sheep to sharks. And so some people will say, especially with the whole healthcare, that it's just a lot of sheep just following. But when we talk about from sheep to sharks, we have to talk to the queen, Bree Sodano, who helps people go from being sheep to sharks. Good morning, Bree. How are you?
Oh, good morning. I'm fantastic. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
You are welcome. I love your background. It's so quaint. It's like almost like an old Victorian house or something.
Well, I am at my house because we're still quarantining. So this is where we are today.
I love it. I love your smile as well. And it's just interesting because it's like how things wind up, because we have Deb and Jody to a certain extent discussing healthcare, and I line people up for certain reasons. So we spoke to Michael. He talked a little bit about finances, but tell us a little bit about yourself, Bree, who you are and what you do.
Oh, so I started my career as an advisor, just like Michael. I sold stocks and bonds and mutual funds, and I am in an area where my clients were coming to see me, and these are people who are smart, who are educated, who make good money, who are successful in all areas of their life, but they were really having a lot of trouble with their cash flow. Like they're like, I have credit cards that are 20 years old. My kids are about to go to college and I'm still paying on my own student loans. You know, I make a lot of money, but I never really seem to be able to save any. And so I started kind of started working with my clients on cash flow management. And that was an interesting process. So I started with like giving them budgets. Like we would make fantastic budgets. Like we would think of everything. It'd be so good. And then they would never do them. They'd come back and
that's me. That's me.
And I would just, what? No, you didn't, nothing. And so I realized that wasn't actually effective for making change. And so I started working on like habit work with my clients, and I found that was more effective. And then I dug a little deeper. I started reading, hundreds and hundreds of books about psychology and books about the way that humans work and books about self-help, and found that there's some mindsets that really get in the way of being able to do that. Sometimes we experience, you know, some bad feelings about money at some point in our lives, and then all of a sudden that carries into our decision making. And so I started working with clients to basically get them ready to be fantastic clients for someone like Michael.
Send them over.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, cash flow management, like strategy work, and then it's habit work. Like, well, what needs to change? And then it's like shifting those thought patterns and that mindset work. And so that's basically what I do in my practice.
Explain the sheep to sharks.
So one day I was having a conversation with my brother, and I was figuring out who I was going to work with. And he was like, you want to work with people who are like the self-aware, like the self-aware sheep, people who are like, man, I did all this. I went to school. I did everything right to be able to live this life. And here I am stuck in this job that I don't want to work, stuck working more hours than I want, stuck doing this that I don't want. And they're like, this isn't what I signed up for. And it's like, man, you like look around and you're like, oh man, I'm not who I want to be. I'm someone else. And I'm lumped in with everybody else. And so it's just a silly little, it's like, I love it, but it's a silly name just to like talk about that transition between like, you know, being the conformist, being in the rat race, being stuck doing something you want, and being your own independent person who's going to like do what you want.
What does that look like? Because when you mentioned creating the budget, I talk about this to all my guests, to bring the experts, and the experts come in and they tell me what to do. And I'm like, oh, that's wonderful. That sounds great. And then I do absolutely nothing. Like I am the quintessential absolute, like I will do absolutely nothing. So how do you get that same person who in theory knows what they need to do, has the information, you've given them a roadmap on what to do, but they're still not going to do it?
So, all right. So the difference between why generally budgets don't work is just that budgets are like a plan. It's like, you ever try like a diet plan? You ever like, yeah, I read that book about the South Beach diet. I'm going to read the book, but I'm not going to cook a single one of those recipes. And then then nothing's going to happen. Mm-hmm. So that's generally, that's what I find happens with budgets. And so the first thing that I recommend for my clients is I have a four-step process I call Find Your Bleed. And so that's really about getting clear about the money, because most of the time when we're buying stuff, that ends up being like a bleed. It ends up being like money that's spent unintentionally. What it really comes down to is you're buying two things. So sometimes you're buying an item to save time. Sometimes you're buying an item to save mental energy. Like if you've ever bought a pizza because you're like, I literally cannot deal with cooking dinner tonight. Like I literally cannot deal. So I'm going to order, you know, sometimes you're buying time, sometimes you're buying mental energy, and sometimes you're filling an emotional need. So if you've ever bought, you know, something because you want to feel a little pretty, or you want to feel a different kind of way, that's generally where you're going to find the bleed. And it takes a different lens of looking at transactions. So if you were to look at your money and just be like, all right, well, I could give up lattes, it's probably not going to be the answer. You have to look at it from a, hey, are you going to three different grocery stores every week? Well, that costs, you know, 4 hours. Does that make sense for you to allocate 4 hours of time to grocery shopping? And so when you start looking at your time and your mental energy as actual resources, it helps with the money management really substantially. And then once you have really good clarity on like what's going on in your money, then you want to start to use systems rather than just a plan. So like I teach my clients, I call it the invisible system, but it's like a system for how cash will flow through your bank accounts. Like, you know how much money needs to go into your bills account. You know how much money, I call it working capital, but it's like, you know, it's all the things that could be a financial emergency if you didn't have money for it, you know, like saving money for snow tires or new clothes or back to school or your brother's wedding or whatever. And then you want to have money for pleasure. You want to set some aside for your vacations, for whatever like makes you happy. And then you have your money for spending. And of course your money for investing is there too. And when you systemize it and you know basically what you're like, there's some freedom for spending inside a parameter. That's much more helpful than saying, all right, I'm going to spend exactly $168 at the grocery store. And then you beat yourself up if you spend $174, you know, that's, so it's a system. You have to system it. Like, you make a system rather than just a plan, if that makes sense.
It makes absolute sense. And I love it. And I love to see how things go and how things work and how things work out, which brings me back over to Michael. What are some of the trends that you've seen over the last 60 days?
Great question.
Well,
thank you, Jody.
Before I get to that, could I just
go ahead.
We're talking about cash flow, right? So we understand what we talk about all the time, and I talk about all the time with my clients, is also about cash flow, because cash flow is what ultimately builds up your net worth, right? And when you retire, your net worth is what carries you through retirement, right? That provides the income for you through retirement. So the first thing that we have to do is protect our cash flow, right? And how do we protect our cash flow? What are the threats to our cash flow? Well, liability is a big threat to our cash flow. Disability is a big threat to our cash flow. And lastly, of course, death is a big threat to our cash flow, right? Those are three things that will prematurely stop our cash flow or income before, obviously, we're ready for it to stop. So, and if any of those things happen, then, you know, our net worth is not going to be built up enough to sustain us throughout our retirement. So we like to put in place the protection before anything else, right? We have to protect the cash flow. And we'll do, you know, we'll look at what is somebody, you know, projected to earn from now till when they retire. And, you know, we'll try and get that protection in place. First and foremost, right? That's what we want to do. And then build up the savings, like Bree's talking about, right? And have a savings bucket that's for opportunities as well as obstacles that come up, you know, the roof, the snow tires, the back to school stuff, but also for vacations, et cetera, et cetera. And I think what your philosophy is spot on, and it's fantastic.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. So as far as trends go, it's a pretty broad question. You know,
would you like me to make it more specific?
Sure.
Because it actually came from the last show, and we had another one of our guests who it was interesting because before we even got into the show, she was ready for questions. She was like, I just did this. Should I do this? And you were like, whoa, like, I can't advise you what to do. I haven't even seen your portfolio, but you kind of gave some trends and some things that were going on in the market. And I think at that time we discussed also like Zoom is one of the examples of a company that skyrocketed. Not only have they skyrocketed, they created a market that not many people, you know, were aware of, even though they have been in business for years. But now all of a sudden everyone's on Zoom. And then I get inboxes from all kinds of people saying, you know what, you don't need to use Zoom. You need to use XYZ company because they're better than Zoom. And Google's out with their, you know, their meeting thing. And Facebook now allows you to have inbox messages with more than one person. You can have family chats. So it's like a whole new market. So people are like, I don't know, you know, what to do. So they're looking to someone like you who can say, well, you know, these are some of the things that I see. You know, I know you can't give specific advice. I know that.
Right. Yeah, no, right. And then like we talked about last time, you know, it's funny when you look at a couple of days after I was on the show, I was looking at on Yahoo Finance. And when you just scroll down the homepage on Yahoo Finance, there was an article, the title, you know, the headline is Why the Market is Going to Continue to Rise. And then the very next article, doubters have, you know, caution about the market. And it's just so all this conflicting information and headlines because nobody knows. And we talked also last time that, you know, when you see these headlines where the market soared today, the market plunged today, and if we, it's all sensationalism. And if we were in a high-rise building and the button said soar or plunge, we would, instead of up or down, right, we wouldn't be getting in that elevator, we'd be taking the stairs. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you're right. Zoom has now created this whole little pocket of an industry that there are copycats, as you mentioned, with Google, with Facebook starting their own thing. There's GoToMeeting. Skype, of course, is always out there. You know, so those are very popular chat rooms, I guess, so to speak. There's also, you know, a lot of the companies now are working on vaccines. There's a lot of biotechs that are working on vaccines, and it's a race to see who's going to get there. The airlines are, you know, they're been really, really beaten up, but over the last week or so, with restrictions becoming less strict, some of the, you know, American Airlines, United Airlines, they both really had over the last, I think it's over the last 4 or 5 days, have come up between 15 and 20% roughly from where they were. So, you know, I think overall, having a securities license and not being a Jim Cramer or a Susie Orman that doesn't have a license that can just say whatever and have a caller say, hey, you know, do you think I should buy this? Yeah, buy that. I can't say that. I would have to, you know, look at your situation, your risk tolerance, your time horizon, what you're currently holding in your portfolio. Again, analyze your cash flow and see where we're at before we can make any kind of recommendation. So
I need you to analyze my cash flow, Mike. That's what we're going to have you analyze it so you can tell me what I need to do. But mentioning right. The airlines, uh-huh. I think it's one of those examples of when the people get tired. I always look at examples of when the people get tired. You know, you're looking at Memorial Weekend. You're looking at the 4th of July. People are like, you know what? I'm ready to go. No matter what you say, I'm getting on this plane. I'm going to see grandma. You know, I'm going to see Uncle Bob, who was a Vietnam vet. That's what I'm going to do. And then when the people get tired, they fill the planes. That's just, you know, I don't have any licenses in anything, Mike, but I put my own little disclaimers. Like, that's just the world according to Sharifa. It is not based on fact. But I point that out to go back to Deb, in that I really truly believe when the people get tired, when the people get tired of anything, that's when things change. I'll give you an example that happened to me, Deb. I remember because in about 2010, I was rear-ended. So occasionally I have back pain. And I remember one time I went, it was like a weekend and my pain was like intolerable. So I went to the ER. So I go to the ER, I'm there for hours. The doctor basically tells me, this is like literally what he tells me, you know, there's nothing I can do for you. Take some aspirin and go see the doctor in the morning. I'm like, okay, you know, all right. At least I know nothing is wrong. A couple of weeks later, I got a bill in the mail for $2,500. I was like, what? You charged me $2,500 to tell me to take Advil? Like that is crazy. And I really believe that when the people get tired of these things, things will change, Deb. Are you feeling me on that? Because that's like what you're I'm passionate about a lot, but I'm very passionate about what this manifesto.
Thank you. I'm feeling you on that. I'm so with you on that. That's the whole point of my book. It's that that's crazy. Like, who tolerates that? I'm guessing my question back to you is, what did you do?
But I do? I had insurance. Okay. They said the insurance didn't cover the ER visit, so I had to pay it out of pocket. And my whole thing is this. And this is not a political show, by the way, in case you couldn't tell. Like, I don't really get into politics. But with that said, I believe politics is the people. We the people, you know. And to me, it's like health insurance or government agencies are the only place where you can go and they give you a bill after you provide a service. Like, can you imagine when we're talking about airplanes? Like, I'm flying, I'm getting on the plane, and I go and I land, and they're like, your airplane ticket is $17,000. Like, okay, wait a minute. And you owe me no matter what. Like, we wouldn't allow that anywhere else, but it's common in health insurance.
I think you're so right. And I guess what I want to say is that you maybe had to pay that bill.
No, I didn't.
Yeah,
it's
good.
Still on my
okay.
It's still
yeah,
on
well,
my credit.
So, I don't have, there's not one formula that works, but I would always suggest you call them up, you ask for detail, you express your outrage, because by the way, we all share that on your behalf and many people yeah. have similar experiences. Yeah, no, that makes yeah. me really mad because it's crazy. So, you know, it's like, we've got to rationalize pricing and it's got to be more fair and it's got to be more tied to the value you get, not just what, you know, some billing codes are in some system back in the, you know, back office, deep bowels of some hospital system. No, it's got to make sense. They've got to be able to explain it to you. And I think if you call or you argue that bill, they may not bend, but someone on the other end of that line is going to hear the just, you know, you're very calm about it, but like the rage and the outrage and the absurdity, like if you heard me on a customer service call, you would die, because I'm like, listen, I understand this is the rule. You have to apply it. I'm telling you this because I hope someone's listening. You know, if my call is recorded, for example, I want you to know this doesn't work from a consumer point of view. And here's mm-hmm. why. So I am that, you know, zealot who will call and explain. And I try to be nice. I try so hard to be nice. And I know the person who's answering the phone, it's not their fault. It's not their decision. But to call and register your frustration, I think, is incredibly important, because if we all did that, the person on the front line would get just sick of these calls. And then the supervisor would hear about it. And then their supervisor would hear about it. And it is that sort of 1,000 nudges or 1,000 pushes that because we're tired, you know, consumers, healthcare consumers, we are tired of paying and paying and paying and then getting a bill, or like you said, going to the doctor, going to the ER and getting, you know, getting a surprise bill. I have so many stories. I have a chapter about price transparency mm-hmm. and I you know, like, why is it so hard? And in what other context would we spend our money? Would we sort of commit our money without knowing? I mean, it's just crazy. And our financial experts here would not recommend that. It's not good for our bank accounts. It's not good for our financial health. It's not good for our mental health. It's not fair. And I think it can change. But the individual, like you felt, I don't want to speak for you, but it, you know, in that situation, so many people feel like there's nothing I can do. I've got this bill. There's nothing I can do about it. And it may be true. You can't fix that one situation. But if you speak up, you might get something. You might get some relief. And you're nudging forward. You're pushing on the system to help
fix it. You're right. And transparency is such a big issue. You know, in my industry, people now over the last, I would say 5 years or so, have really started, before you sit down, okay, let's talk about your fee structure, you know? And we don't do that. And it with you go see your doctor, you're like, great, I'm making my appointment for my doctor. And then, you know, a few weeks later, you get a bill.
You know, and to that point, because I do see a lot of individuals that create such an economic stress, and it's like you can't afford to get sick in our country. Mm-hmm. Even if you have insurance, it doesn't cover anything, everything. But what I would say, Sharifa, and this is what I recommend, I tell people, you need to contact the patient care or the financial office of that hospital, surgery center, doctor's office. And just what Deb was saying, you need to negotiate. You need to walk in and say, I can't afford to pay this. How can you help me? Because there's always room for negotiation. Now, it may not be a lot, but I have seen people get assistance and the bills lowered. So even though time has passed, Sharifa, I recommend that. And then I had a question for Bree and Michael. Do you see more emotional decision, or do you see more financial decisions being made on emotion or intellect with this pandemic?
For me,
can I jump before we go to that question? It's such a great question. Can I just say, I just want to add a note to what Jody said. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I think it's not just if you can't afford it. Like Sharifa didn't say, you know, I can't afford the bill. It's like there is also a level of fairness and value. Mm-hmm. And so I think I heard from consumers was when I would say, you know, did you ever negotiate? I actually had someone say, well, I'm not poor. I'm not low income. I don't need that. And to me, negotiation is not about, it may be prompted by, right, it may be spurred by a lack of affordability or lack of funds to pay. That's a great, you know, impetus to try to negotiate, but it is the principle. So I just wanted to add that. I don't think you have to, I think for some people, negotiating is seen as something you only do if you're in trouble. And I actually think it's a very powerful, very empowered stance to take. I'm sorry to cut you off.
That's what we do here at the round table. That's how you know it's being good when people are like, wait a minute, I got to make a point.
Yeah. And to pick up on that, you know, with some of the business owners that I've worked with, as far as their employees, if they feel like they can't afford to go see the doctor, they don't, and they get sicker or they're out of work longer. And then that disrupts the business and the company's overall profitability. And so there's got to be some sort of better system to allow people to feel financially confident to be able to go see the doctor when they are feeling ill, you know, even if it's some sort of minor illness. Jody, to your question, it has really depended on the individual. You know, because some people are more left brain, some people more right brain. By and large, I would say the majority of people have been more on the emotional side, though, on both ways. While the market was going down, right, they've been like, oh my God, we got to get out, we got to sell, we got to sell, we got to sell. And no matter, you know, what their situation was, if they were far from retirement or if they were really near to retirement, you emotionally, you just can't get them to understand, you know, their situation and just take the emotion out of it. And then conversely, while the market has bounced back up, the market has bounced back up about 35% or so from where it was at the bottom. You have this FOMO, right? The fear of missing out. You have people that are jumping back in and, you know, they're now getting in when we've already had a rebound of over, like I said, 30 to 35%. And we, who knows what's going to happen from now, right? We may see another wave of coronavirus, which is going to stall the economy again, even more. We don't have any kind of earnings guidance from the companies, from any of the companies out there, because they don't know, you know, what it's going to look like for their second quarter yet. And so we are dealing with such uncertainty that, you know, you have both sides of the fence.
Yeah. And for my clients, I've seen actually a lot of my clients are business owners. So their income may have changed a little bit, but they generally didn't lose all of their income. And so funny enough, a lot of my clients are actually doing pretty well financially because there's nowhere to spend money. Like there's where are you going to go? Like there's nowhere to, you can't go out to eat. You can't go to Marshall's. You can't walk around. So it's funny because I kind of see like there's going to be like a buildup of being able to even just buy things that are absolutely like just basic necessities. Like for my own self, like I need summer clothes. Like it's time to buy summer clothes, and I've not been able to like go do that yet. So when the stores open, I'll probably be, you know, out to go buy some stuff. And it's so there's just been a little bit of like a forced restriction. So I would expect a little bit of just like a spending bounce back. And, you know, with the stimulus money and some other things, some people are having money in their savings account that they're not used to having, to be perfect. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's that.
You remind me of something I saw yesterday I thought was just so interesting and kind of hilarious. I actually took a screenshot and shared it. Here in California, our governor was he was addressing the public about reopening the barbershops and the beauty salons, and that was his focus. And then in the comments, and I actually don't even know why it stood out. It was the only comment that stood out. And a lady's like, when are we reopening Ross? And I just thought it was so hilarious because I was like, yes, the important questions. Let's ask the important questions, you know what I mean? Like, get Ross open now.
Yeah. Yep, people are feeling that. I had a client, she's in Georgia. And she was like, I drove by and I saw that the Home Goods was open. Like she was
it's like an awakening. And you know, they've titled this the quarantine fatigue, which should actually be quarantine fatigue, anxiety, depression, anger. And there's been so many behavioral and psychological phenomena that are evolving, but it's this whole almost overnight, our lives changed, and we are privileged as Americans. And boy, has this been a real awakening. This is just, not to digress too far, but the number one population, in at least with my colleagues and I, that we see the biggest infringement has been on the adolescent population and their vulnerability, because socially that's such a big part of it. But this whole quarantine fatigue thing is a phenomenon. It truly is. And I think we're all excited with the little things anymore, like the opening of Ross or Home Goods, the restaurants in Colorado. I think it was yesterday or the day before, they're open now with limitations. But the biggest thing is mask versus no mask. And then, okay, when we have a vaccine versus no vaccine. So that'll be interesting too. And I think it's going to affect all of us in
Jody, I'm of the very conservative mask versus no mask, social distance. You know, I have a 12-year-old daughter and a 9-year-old daughter, trying to keep them safe. We took a little family trip. I'm also out in Los Angeles. We took a little family trip a couple weekends ago down to Santa Monica to walk along. There's a road that kind of overlooks the ocean, and then you could walk down these stairs to get to the ocean and everything. And as we're walking along the road and then down the stairs, so many people without masks. I would say probably there were maybe 30 to 40% of people had the masks on. And in my head, I am just getting angrier and angrier and angrier. And I'm telling my wife, listen, we've been so vigilant for the last 50 days. And now you're comfortable coming out with all these, my word, idiots that aren't wearing masks. Like, what are we doing? So my question, I guess, is, you know, psychologically, what would you recommend to, you know, like, take that deep breath and...
It's a big point of contention. And like my colleagues and I talk about this all the time, because you've got people that are either, both sides are equally as feel strongly. I mean, it's like a decision politically or religious, it's that strong. And what I tell people, because I have to remain neutral, is you have to do what is comfortable for you. But you also have to understand that we all have a responsibility to our will, for everybody's well-being. But people, not everybody believes that. You have people who aren't comfortable in masks or believe it's a violation of their freedom. And then you have other people, this is a medical emergency. We know how the pathogen spreads. But what I tell people is you have to respect other people's decision. And do not come with controversy, aggression, or violence, which we're starting to see a lot of that. People walking in, I refuse to wear a mask. There's been a few situations with guns. You have to come in peace to prove a point for people to listen. You have to be able to intellectually defend your position. So what I would say is, Michael, you have to do what's comfortable for you. And I, my son and I had these conversations all the time with that, because he doesn't understand either. He's been raised in a medical family. So his is like, well, it's just an added level of protection. Why is it a big deal? But for some people, it is a very big deal, because here again, it's not perhaps an intellectual decision. It's an emotional one. And with emotion, it overrides intellect all the time, because that's a primal part of the brain. That's the survival part of the brain. And that's the fight and flight and that anxiety that we're all experiencing with this pandemic. And we are divided. So
we are.
I love the people that are walking, holding the mask, Yeah. Don't put it on. I'm like, yeah, right there.
Yeah, just, I'm probably that person. I hate having it on.
A lot of people are uncomfortable.
I don't like having it on my face. I feel like I can't breathe as well. And then seeing other people in masks actually, like, it just, like, it's like a little bit of a put off. It makes me, you can't see somebody, you can't see their facial expressions. And I don't really love it. I'm like in the no mask camp. And I think there's a lot of questions as to the effectiveness of it. Like, if you look at the packages on masks, they're like, this is not good for coronavirus. Like, so it's like, right. Well, if it's saying on the package of the mask that it's not good, it's like, is it a placebo effect? Like, what's the actual benefit there? So I'll put the mask on to go.
Masks are not perfect, but they definitely make a difference, and they protect. If you're carrying the virus, I'm with Michael. I'm with you too. I don't like wearing a mask. It's uncomfortable and it's kind of freaky to see everyone in masks, but they do makes a huge difference. And that's, I think, very scientifically documented. I'm not a scientist, so, but I think, like, I would ask you, do you wear a seatbelt, and are you uncomfortable in a seatbelt? Do you wear it anyway?
Not across my face. I mean, let
me just cut in real quick, because we're going to be running out of time in a little bit to answer your question, because that was a very thought provoking question. But as far as, do I wear a seatbelt? I wear a seatbelt when the car is in motion. When the car's not in motion, I may be sitting in the car with no seatbelt on. So I'm one of those people who I will have the mask on me. I always wear a mask if I'm going to a store. I wear a mask if I know there's going to be a group of people or some people I'm going to interact with. Like Michael, I live in Los Angeles County. I live in Long Beach. I can walk to the beach. And so my cousin and I, we've been like, okay, for the last month, we need to get healthier. We need to get out the house, because we were going a little stir crazy. And so we've been doing these walks. So I always have my mask on me, and I always, but I don't, I can't even, I'm trying to walk. I can barely breathe. The last thing I need is something covering my face, but I don't get close to people. If I saw Michael and his family, I'd be like, oh, let me stand 10 feet away, because I definitely wouldn't want anything to happen to him and his beloved family. But I know, with trying to walk and walk along the beach, it's usually, not a lot of people, and definitely nobody I'm going to be within 6 feet of. Now, with that said, not to take the final word, but that's who I am and what I do. Coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to speak directly to everyone who's watching live, as well as everyone who's watching in the archives, and really just let them know what you like for them to take away from your interview or your appearance. And I'm going to start with you, Bree.
Oh, that was a surprise.
You got to watch the show. If you watch the show, you know that you're telling on yourself, Bree.
So I would just like to invite the audience. I have a ton of free content that's available on my Facebook page. I make videos. They're all like education-based. They're little learning experiences. And they're shorter versions on my Instagram. And all of that is at Sheep to Shark. And so I guess the message that I would like to say is that basically, no matter where your income is, you're able to have financial freedom and security if you want it. Like, it's available. I've seen clients making very, small amount of money have a lot of freedom and security and money and savings. And I've seen clients with a lot more money have the same thing. And so it's not really necessarily just based on income. So it's one of those things that you have to put a little work in toward to change your, if there's habits to change or there's emotions to fill without money. But those are the sort of things that's available to everybody, freedom and security.
That's right. Go from being a sheep to a shark. Jody, what do you have for us?
Going to say what I did the last time we met. I'm really proud of us as a nation, and it takes great strength and courage to get through this, because life is so different. This force of nature has just equalized all of us in many ways. COVID-19 is for now, not forever. We are coming out of things. We need to be patient. We need the support of other people. You need to reach out to other people. Family, friends, professionals, and I'm proud of us, and I believe we will get through this.
Oh, that is so beautiful. See, that's
thank you.
That's why I love having you as a guest on the show. You always just bring that warmth, and I just love
it. Oh, do
that
I? Joke. Thank you, because I'm not known for being diplomatic, but thank you.
Yeah, I don't really like people who are known for being diplomatic. I'm like, go away, because I want to hear the truth. And that's what the audience wants. They want to hear the truth. At least, you know, your truth. So that's going to bring me over to Deb. Deb, what do you have for us?
Sure. I'll go with that. The truth is, in healthcare, we all have a little more power than we realize if we claim it. And I encourage everyone to think and act like a consumer of their own healthcare, like the master of their domain. May not feel like you're in control, but you have more power than you think. And especially now, it's now more than ever, it's time to really take charge of our own health.
Where can we pick up a copy of your book?
Thank you. Sorry, you talked about, can I reference your pitch slapping? I'm not a pitch slapper.
No, really pitch slapping for clarification, because I kind of felt bad. I'm like, I'm watching with your book. And I'm like, no, I just assaulted Deb. No, pitch slapping refers to people who, like, you just meet them. You're like, hi, my name is Sharifa. Hi, my name is Bill. Buy my book. You know, it's like, that's pitch slapping. Like, can we at least, like, how are you doing? You know, kind of like a date. Like, don't just come in like, hey, let's go to bed. You know what I mean? Like, ease into it.
Yeah, no, and I'd rather promote something else than myself. But I will tell you that my book, The Healthcare Consumer's Manifesto, is on Amazon or on my own website. You can get a signed copy, debgordon.com.
No, I love it. I love it. I love it. Definitely. I'm going to pick up a copy and hope you decide to come back, because we learned a lot and there are so many more topics that we can discuss with you, Deb. Michael, what do you have for us?
Well, again, I want to say thanks for having me back.
You are welcome.
It was fun the first time. It was fun this time. Definitely learned a lot on both times, especially about being a healthcare consumer and an advocate for yourself. I would just like to say that, kind of echoing what Bree was saying, you know, we all have the power to have the financial freedom and flexibility and independence that we want and deserve. There are ways to get there, and it doesn't matter your income level, you know, what it is, but putting the proper plan together, thinking logically about the sequence of how we should save and where we should save and what we should be doing is critical to having an optimal plan. And whether you're a business owner that is, you know, has a company that's doing incredibly well or not, there are things that we could put in place to help everyone. And again, Sharifa, I just want to thank you again for having me.
You are so welcome. Thank you. It's always fun when you're here, because you always bring, again, that wealth of information, the wealth of knowledge. And I just love the way you bring it. You know, you're humble and you're able to share your stories about your life and your family. And that's one of the things that makes for a great guest, not someone who is just focused on the marketing or the business, but someone who comes in, is vulnerable, human, and says, you know what, this is my life. This is who I am, but I'm here to help you. So thank you. Thank you all for being a guest on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I hope you enjoyed yourself, because I definitely enjoyed myself. I keep telling people, this is not even a talk show anymore. This is a Sharifa Hardy therapy session. So you guys are here to help me become a better me. So thank you. Thank you, everyone who's tuned in to watch the show live, as well as everyone who is watching in the archives. And again, please go ahead and share this show, because our guests brought a wealth of information just for you. And if you're interested in being a guest, please visit the website at asksharifa.com. Until tomorrow, everyone have a safe and blessed day. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye.